Thanks for tuning to Digital Voices Podcast, where we chat digital transformation, challenges and opportunities across healthcare and life sciences. And now, your host, Ed Marks.
Welcome to another episode. So excited to have you as part of Digital Voices. As you know, we cut across the spectrum of health and life sciences, talking all things digital. Oftentimes, we focus in on payers and pharma and providers and, of course, patients. And today, we're going to take a little bit of a different angle on digital, and that is the voice of the physician CEO or physician executive. And I can't think of anyone better than Dr. Ed Sabani to be our guest and to talk about this. When it comes to physician leaders, I've had the opportunity to work with many across my career. In fact, my first salaried job in healthcare was physician relations. My job, literally, was to make physicians happy. So we were in a health system that was pretty secluded. In fact, at the time, it may still be the same today, but this would have been in the 90s, that it was the largest city in the country that only had one hospital provider. So that was Poudre Valley Hospital in Fort Collins, Colorado, now part of the bigger system. But back then, it was standalone and independent. And so I got to work with a lot of physician leaders. And just like non-physician leaders, there's all types, right? There's good and great and maybe not as good. And the point I'm making here is that I got to work with a lot of different leaders. And then as I progressed in my career as an executive myself, I've got to work at some many amazing organizations and with amazing leaders. And I have to tell you that, and I think you're going to come to the same conclusion at the end of this podcast, that Dr. Sabani, and I'll just refer to him as Ed as he goes by, is the best out there when it comes to being not only a clinician, but a humble leader, thoughtful, takes on a attitude of service. Just, I could go on and on, but just truly remarkable person. I love working with great people. And so Ed is definitely one of the great ones that I've had the opportunity to serve with. So we met first time in 2017. I was being recruited by the Cleveland Clinic. Ed was on the recruitment team. And so I got to meet him and I was immediately impressed. I remember writing down in my notes some things about him that I've already articulated here. And so I learned from him. So I would watch him in the ensuing years that we served together and just how he interacted with others of different levels in the organization, how he handled stressful situations. I was definitely watching and learning. So Ed, thank you for being our guest today.
Oh gosh, Ed, thank you so much. I'm so excited. I'm so excited to be here. And it is a privilege, you know, you and I worked together for a number of years. And, yeah. You know, I look back and I saw in you servant leadership. I saw in you a great communicator. I've watched your podcasts. So I'm extraordinarily excited to be here with you today. Thank you.
All right. That's awesome. So you'll know, Ed, that one of the questions I ask everyone is about music. So what is your favorite music? Like in your downtime, what do you like to listen to?
Okay. So you may date me on this, but I really like Fleetwood Mac. Always have. You know, what I like about Fleetwood Mac, there aren't a lot of bands that all four of the main folks at different times are, you know, soloing or showing their talents really very clearly. So I really like that band. The other side of me likes Talking Heads. So I've got some, you know, issues going on.
So now I know why we get along so well. No, I love those bands, and Rumors is definitely one of the all-time, got to be in the top 10 classic albums. Absolutely. In history. So that's very cool. And the other question I like to ask as we get into this is, what is your passion or life message, or some people have a mantra, but what is it that stokes your fire and gets you to do the things that you do?
Yeah, thank you, Ed. You know, one of the things that I think we all face as leaders is, do we embrace just the status quo or do we really push the envelope? And, you know, one of the things that I tell my kids a lot, and they could, if they were on this podcast, they would remark about it, is that ships are safe in harbor, but that's not what we're built for. We're built to make things better than they were when we found them. And, you know, that means as leaders, we take risks. It means that we don't plunder forward without strong planning. That's not part of this thought process. But we plan hard and we take risks and we do our best to execute. You know, the ships in the 1400s, that was the big period where we were starting, humankind was doing a lot of navigation. They were going out with basic astronomy and basic math and doing amazing things. They didn't just go forth and fill their sails. They did some science. But at the end of the day, they took risk. And I think that ability to take risk, to adjust your course when you need to, but really embrace some degree of uncertainty is key for us as leaders right now.
Yeah, I love that analogy, something I can certainly relate to. So let's talk about your story, and both on the personal and professional side. Like, tell us a little bit about yourself, because I think that's going to form sort of the next couple of questions and how it all comes together.
Yeah, thank you. So, you know, I'm from a middle-class family. I was a kid from Virginia. Very entrepreneurial as a childhood. I've worked since I was probably 14, you know, lawn services and that sort of stuff. Yeah. Very small family. And knew at an early age I was interested in science. And so I was the kid that was always taking things apart. You know, full disclosure, I couldn't always put them back together, but, you know, they were taken apart. I studied engineering in school and then went on to medical school. And I discovered I liked surgery. I liked, you know, immediate interventions to improve situations. And I was privileged to come into the Air Force and have a 21-year career of service. You also had a fantastic career in the military, in the Army, I believe. And I will say that there's nothing like those. They really impact you. They teach you values. They give you leadership opportunities. So it was a fantastic experience. Most importantly, I should mention, I've been married for 35 years. My wife is indeed my better half. We have two wonderful children. My daughter, Emily, who is a marketing and business whiz in healthcare, and my son, Ned, who is leaving in 4 weeks to start Air Force pilot training. So we got a lot of exciting things in our family.
Yeah, I've met everyone, and it is a pretty amazing family. I think we ran into each other one time at, you're celebrating your wife's birthday, I think, or maybe it was your birthday.
Could have been.
Yeah, it was at a restaurant, and yeah, that was kind of fun. So yeah, so you really covered sort of the military perspective, and thank you for your service, by the way. And how did you get interested in healthcare? So you mentioned, you know, your interest in surgery to get the make immediate intervention, but as a youngster, you know, was there anything specific that kind of led you to think, I'd like to be a doctor?
Yeah, you know, when I was in school in engineering, I would volunteer at night to be a orderly at a local hospital, a very small community hospital. And there was a single patient who I wrote a paper on because he was so impactful, and I've thought of him most of my life. His name was Elmer. He was an older gentleman who I would be at the bedside and keep company. He didn't really have family that I could see, and didn't have a great deal of financial means. And we would talk, and we talked a lot. And I watched people, I watched healthcare teams talking to him and intervening with him and communicating with him. And I thought, you know, this is the really, really cool part of science. Right. You get to do science and you get to improve the human condition. So I never forgot him. It really drove me in the directions I went. And, you know, I think about him often.
Yeah, that's a great story. And it's interesting how our early life experiences definitely shape us, who we are, and our vocation, for sure. So since I've known you, you've been a huge proponent of digital technology. And that was the fun thing of working together, is it wasn't as if in some situations, like some of my peers, some other chief digital officers or chief information officers, they're in situations where they are working in an organization that's not super progressive or with a leader that doesn't want to push, you know, sort of digital. But the nice thing serving with you, and you led all these amazing hospitals, is you also had a keen interest in digital. And how did you get there? So I would say that you're ahead of your peers. How did you get there to land on that spot? Like, yeah, we really should be embracing digital and push these things along.
Well, thank you. You know, I've always loved technology. So I'm probably what you would classify as an early adopter as at a personal level. You know, I had the cell phone that came with the suitcase. And I had the PC that you had to know code, it felt like, to even get it to turn on. But I think your personal needs are very different than what you need at a professional level. And what you need at a professional level is that technology must always be looked at as a means to an end, to what you want to improve, not the end in itself. And I think, you know, you're in my partnership at the clinic was fantastic because you were a great communicator about what technology could do for the ends, not as a you know, purely as you would talk about what we could accomplish with the use of the technology rather than the technology itself. And I think that's the focus we need to have. We can really make life better. I've been, you know, privileged in my career so far to go from pencil and paper to, you know, voice recognition and AI and more. And so I'm excited about it. And I think, you know, partnering with an IT leader like you is key for someone to really get to be a proponent for us to, you know, understand what we can do together.
Yeah. So following that train of thought, what is important for like a chief digital officer to know about clinicians in order to get down that path that you were just describing, how we partnered together, and what counsel would you give a CIO or a CDO, you know, how to do that effectively with medical staff leadership?
Yeah, you know, I think in all of our areas where we have subject matter expertise, we have a tendency to presume that other people know our vernacular or understand at a deeper level than they may. So I think one of the things that an effective CDO or CIO can do is really communicate in more lay terms, be very focused on what we're going to accomplish. It is not the speed of data transmission or any other technical parameter. It's how can this improve the care we give, or how can this improve my life as a clinician in delivering the best care? And I think when we get to that level and say, well, this is what we're going to be able to do, you're no longer going to have to enter in all of this information, and we're going to help you so that it knows who you are, it knows how, you know, some basic information about the patient, and these are safety things. I mean, those sort of conversations, I think, really make a big difference. And I think, you know, the other thing is, I will nod my head when I'm having conversations, but you are always great at saying, you know, making sure we really understood, we really had a deep understanding, and you would vector check, as we used to call it, or check back with us and say, you know, does this make sense? What can I do to clarify? I think you do that and we're all on the same page, and we can really accomplish amazing things together.
Yeah, those are really practical ideas about how individuals on the tech side, digital side, can be more effective working with medical staff and medical staff leadership. You know, I often wondered, Ed, you know, as a leader, how did you convince medical staff to adopt digital? Like, we did a lot of M&A together, and you would find yourself, you know, looking at medical staffs from other hospitals that weren't yet part of our system. And you had to convince them somehow that one of the benefits was, look, you know, we're digitally advanced. And sometimes culturally, whatever reasons there might be, organizations or individuals aren't really interested. So what were some of the techniques that you might have employed to sort of help your peers or medical staff sort of see the digital side?
Yeah, I think the first thing you have to do is very proactively listen to them. Understand what they need out of technology so that as you deploy this, you are responding to something that they have indicated is to be important for them. I think you need to partner with them during the planning process. you really need to have them at the table. It's hard to talk about cardiology unless I've got a cardiologist in our IT team and we're all together and sharing very detailed thoughts. We have to be patient with each other and continue a two-way dialogue. We all know that physicians are well-meaning, but sometimes change can be difficult because they're laser focused on what's the right thing for their patients. So we really need to remember that and continually revisit that with them and explain with them and make sure that they understand. You know, early in my career, I had the privilege of standing before a group of 800 physicians and talking about the fact that we were going from paper notes to electronic medical records. And today, all of us, it's no big deal. But back then, it was a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
And we talked a lot about the fact that this wasn't about the platform. This was about a technology that would allow us to have the records instantly available and make sure we knew the allergies and make sure we could, safely document for another provider. And so the whole emphasis, it gets back to the ends in mind. The whole emphasis has to be on improving the state of the patients.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That's the common sort of what you're saying is what is the common ground? And it really is at the end of the day about the patient experience, about the patient outcomes. And you can always use that as that setting the table. Like, hey, we all agree on this. Let's just figure out the best way to leverage these tools to get there. That's awesome. So we talked around this a little bit, Ed, already, but this is maybe a little bit more precise. And that is, what should a CIO or CDO know about clinicians that they may not already understand? Like, for instance, you just shared how physicians are very focused on the patient. So that's a key thing for everyone to understand. Are there any other things that we should know in order that we best partner, best make decisions, get everyone sort of on the same team, headed in the same direction?
Yeah, I think you build trust. I think the biggest thing is you build trust, and you build trust by communicating very frequently, showing you're genuinely interested. And frankly, you're the example of this, Ed. I watched you build trust with clinicians, show you were genuinely interested in making things better for them and their patients, revisiting it frequently to make sure that they understood and we were on the right path. I think those are the things that make a huge difference. We don't start trusting everybody, right? Change is hard. We don't start with this sense that this is necessarily a good thing. We have to kind of build this trust with time.
Yeah, and I think, it's all about evidence-based outcomes and things like that. We have to show, like as tech leaders or digital leaders, we have to build that trust by doing things, performing and executing well and giving evidence that, yes, this is working. And sometimes it's small steps. Like you and I, we worked on some things before we came out with like something, a major change. We would show success with something much more simple, maybe less risk, and build that confidence. And then we could say, okay, now, see, we've proven ourselves we can do these amazing things.
Absolutely.
So speaking of amazing things, so Ed, what if you were to put on your future hat or look into the crystal ball, in terms of digital transformation, where else do you think we might be headed? Or again, sort of counsel to chief digital officers, where should we be looking next? What do you think are the big things that are here now or on the horizon that we really need to double down on?
Yeah. So maybe I could start with the end. The end of what I think we need to develop is a system that lets you get your care in your home. Right. So everything we do, we should start to say, what's the gap? Why did I have to have you in the ambulatory surgery center for 4 hours post-surgery? Why did I have to, admit you for diabetes? Why did I have to do these things? Could I have taken as well or frankly better care of you in your own house? So now we start with a framed problem that we can step in and say, what are the gaps that we have? And, the gaps are, we're making a great deal of progress, but I think remote monitoring remains an opportunity for us. I think pushing personalized information to people that is differentiated so that they're getting particularly what they need at home. I think that's really important. I think anything that we can do to keep you out of the hospital with technology, predictive analytics about it appears that Mr. Smith is starting to show signs that are predictive of needing of sepsis. We're going to intervene early. You know, one of the things that we do, one of the most serious operations that I did is something called a cystectomy. It's removal of the bladder. It's a very big surgery. One of the reasons we would admit people after operations is dehydration. So the ability to see at home, Mr. Smith's starting to show signs of dehydration. His pulse rate is up. Some of his lab tests at home are showing some signs. I need to intervene now and get a team out there or counsel him on how he can alter things to make a difference. Those are the kind of things that I think are our future.
Yeah, that's I agree with you completely, right on. And I know you and I and others on our team, we were definitely headed down that direction. Yes. That is definitely the future. It also made me think, Ed, when you were answering the question, another big issue in healthcare today, and you and I also worked together and partnered on this, is physician burnout. And while we can't say that physician burnout is a result of technology, certainly technology has not helped the situation. What do you think about physician burnout in terms of digital? Like, what else might a CDO look at when it comes to, hey, how do I help relieve some of the physician burnout, some of the stress of the practice of medicine? Are there some things that you would suggest that we look at?
You know, I think it's a very, very important topic. I think there are a couple things come to mind. One is it really helps, and you did this, and I've seen other folks do this, to watch to live a day in the life of a clinician. What are they saying? They're doing a lot of pre-authorizations. They're populating a lot of fields. They're cut and pasting a lot of information from one place to another to make sure it's in the right thing on a form. You know, I could go on and on, but these are the things that they deal with. And so you were able to step back and go, okay, I understand. That's key. Let's target each of them. Let's target the number of clicks per day. Let's target the pajama time, as we termed, the after hours, work. Let's see what we can do to make them better. How can we use other parts of our team? How can we use AI? How can we really formulate approaches that make life easier? So I think it starts with a perception and an understanding that you care on the digital side and you understand the problem. And then you can start teasing out the pieces.
Yeah, those are great ideas, great suggestions. I've already taken multiple notes on different items that any of my peers, whether they're on the provider side or payer or pharma, can certainly take advantage of. So this has been really good. Ed, before we sort of summarize and close, is there anything else that you want to share from a physician executive, physician CEO point of view that digitalists such as myself and other CDOs want to think about or should be thinking about?
No, I think listening and being patient is critically important. We're all after the same thing. We have different tools in our toolbox, but we're all after the same thing. And again, you are an example of somebody that gets it. So thank you.
Well, that's because I worked with other people like yourself that got it. So it was definitely a mutual thing. But yeah, if I sort of summarize key themes, it's really about empathy, understanding one another. We're never the enemy. You know, sometimes you're in an organization and you're almost like fighting each other. But that's not what you should be doing. You should find that common understanding and empathize and have patience. And the day in the life is really good that you mentioned, Ed, and very practical. I was fortunate, as you know, to spend one day a week actually working in anesthesia in the early morning hours. And that was really an eye-opening experience for me. I'm glad I was able to do that. And so not everyone might be able to do that, but to the extent that you can, shadow a clinician, really critical. And not just as a one-time event, really focusing on the burnout. So that's another way of, you know, you mentioned really getting closer to the clinician and the leadership by building trust, showing interest. When you do spend that day in the life, when you do sort of understand the clinician burnout aspects and you come up with solutions to partner together on, you can really make a difference. And then I'm just summarizing what we just said, and just as the key point. And then ultimately, when you built that trust and that understanding, you have that empathy, you can do the amazing things you were describing in terms of the future and doing everything possible for care at home. So it makes me want to work with you again, Ed.
Me too. I'm going to look for a chance. I got to tell you, Ed, it's been an absolute joy to get to talk to you. And, you know, to those that are watching this, this is an example of a servant leader like I've never seen. So thank you for all you're doing for the field and for our patients.
Well, thank you, Ed. And the feeling is clearly mutual. I think that's what made our relationship so special and us able to do a great many things in a short amount of time was having sort of that common shared values and vision. Yes. And also, you know, what digital can do to impact the lives of patients, to save lives, to increase quality care, patient safety, as well as the overall experience and for the clinician side as well. So thanks again.
Thank you.
And thank you, our audience, for participating. As you know, you can always ask questions live via voice recording. So you can send in your voice recording via email. Our engineer will post the email address in the show notes. We will randomly select those, play those questions live, where we'll answer them. And that way you can be more engaged than ever. So thanks again, and we'll chat with you soon.
Hey there, I'm Daniel, one of the producers of this podcast. I'm usually not on the mic except for that awesome intro and outro, but I wanted to take a quick second to invite you to this year's Digital Voices Conference. Last year, I attended Digital Voices, and what I learned helped me level up in my career, my understanding of digital care, and impress my boss. This year's conference features chief digital officers from GE, Zoom, and Anthem. These are the foremost leaders in the space when it comes to digital healthcare. The conference is 100% virtual, so you don't have to mess with travel or PTO. Just log in at the time of the show. Digital Voices 2021 will be on Thursday, June 17th at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, and registration is 100% free. Just go to digitalvoices.com. That's DGTLvoices.com to register. Thanks again for listening.
Thank you for listening to Digital Voices Podcast with Ed Martin. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe on your preferred streaming service and leave a rating and review. And most importantly, thanks again for listening.